This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Have you been a victim of a scalper and now you wander lost in the wild in fear that the toys you're hunting for will forever be out of your reach? Well, my fellow toy junkies, fear not.
I have the answer.
Well, actually, I don't, but these toy store owners do. Find them with me, Bevan, at a toy store near you, the podcast.
Welcome to A Toy Store Near You podcast, a companion podcast to Nacelle Company's A Toy Store Near You Prime series, which you can also view on YouTube. I am your host, Bevan, and today we are chatting with Billy Galaxy from Billy Galaxy Toys Vintage and Collectibles.
So, Billy, this is kind of special because you were episode one of the series, A Toy Store Near You, and you are the first episode for the companion podcast of A Toy Store Near You. When did you record the A Toy Store Near You? Was that the first month of lockdown?
Something like that. It was, I don't even remember. Time is a blur these days.
I don't know what day it is.
On it because since we were the prototype, we got all the notes and, you know, the first iteration of what it was going to be was actually, a little less serious as far as content as well as production. And then I think that the project became more serious of a production as well as, you know, the content itself that they wanted in there.
So walk me through this, because I was on a panel with Brian for the virtual San Diego Comic-Con, and I think he told me that he shipped material to you guys.
No, like, this is before they started doing that, right?
Really?
Came up with that idea. So it's all done on, like, you know, our phones and stuff.
Oh, really? So you guys just mailed him material? Is that how that happened?
Well, we uploaded it.
Yeah, that's what, in a Dropbox kind of thing. Yeah.
And
that's cool.
So that was interesting and also much more time consuming than I had anticipated. I have a lot more respect for people in the back end of this stuff at this point.
Were you given any like bullet points of like discuss these things? Because you covered like five of your top toys.
Well, I think initially it was a top 10 and then it was too toy centric. You know, and they wanted the show ideally is for everybody, not just for toy collectors. And so 10 toys was too toy centric. And also my top picks were just what I had around the shop because I had no notice. I mean, I literally got a call from Brian while I was on the bus.
Okay.
And he's like, hey, you know, I got this idea. You know, you think you can have me some footage by like tomorrow or something? I was like, okay. So we actually shot that, you know, with 3 hours notice or something, like all the parts of us talking about toys and things.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
You know, given more notice, I would have liked to have talked about things from my own collection and, you know, things that I find more interesting. But I don't know, I was pleased with, I guess, the stuff we pulled up around the shop. I was like, yeah, I guess we do have some neat stuff in here.
What do you classify, for those that are not like into the toy collecting world, when you classify like a good toy, are you talking about like the nostalgia aspect of it? Or are you talking about the value of it? Is it a combination of both?
Well, I think it's my personal opinion of it is what I'm referring to.
Okay.
Which is not necessarily value or nostalgia related.
It's just like your personal preference.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like a lot of oddball stuff. And I like a lot of art. Like I own like original paintings to toy packaging and things like that. And I used to own an art gallery as well.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which actually we had locations in Portland and Tokyo for a while.
That's awesome.
But
do you have a favorite era of paintings?
I mean, it would depend on the artist. I mean, my own collection, I typically collect toy-related art, stuff that was used in packagings, comic book art, stuff like that. But I do have some, like, World War II and before era paintings that were used in, like, the Saturday Evening Post and things like that.
That's cool. I saw, so when I watched the episode, I saw that you were in the punk rock scene. How did you get into that?
I don't know. I've never thought about that. That's just where I wound up. It's where I belonged, I guess. But I don't know how well it was conveyed in the episode, but I think, you know, and also it's turned out that a lot of the other toy shop owners, you know, are from underground music scenes, like There have been punk and metal bands and stuff. I think three of the first five episodes. And then I know some of the people coming up in the next batch are also, you know, coming out of the underground music scenes. There's definitely some kind of connection there. And I feel like it's a lot to do with the DIY ethos that's learned kind of growing up in that. Because I, you know, was in bands as well as produced shows, worked at clubs and all that stuff. And there's no support for it at that time. It was not as popular or mainstream of a thing as it is now. It was an actual underground thing. And you had to do it yourself with your friends if you were going to make anything happen. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of valuable lessons learned by people involved in those scenes in the 80s and 90s or earlier.
That's pretty cool. Because you wouldn't, I wouldn't necessarily think like punk rock collects to like, connects to toy collecting. And so I found that very fascinating.
Yeah, especially when you get into like the more obscure stuff. There's especially seems to be like a weird tie-in with like Japanese toy collecting and like mm-hmm. punk rock. I don't know, I guess maybe because it's closer to art. If you look at the designs of those things.
Yeah, yeah. I saw one of the things that you pulled out in the episode was like a Hulk Hogan record. And I had no idea that he even sang or was part of the rock scene as
he
well.
He played bass like as an amateur bass player. But I mean, I think because he was a famous wrestler, he got to, you know, make music. I don't think he ever released any music in the United States. Yeah, he had a wrestling career for several years in Japan as a professional wrestler before he ever was famous here. That's actually the case with a lot of famous wrestlers from the 80s. They started out in Japan and kind of got huge over there and then would come over here.
That's pretty fascinating as well. But a lot of like also iconic toy lines came from Japan and then made their way over to the United States as well.
There's a lot of good stuff that comes from Japan.
A lot of really great stuff that comes from Japan. But I wanted to check in. I mean, since the show aired, how has the shop been for you guys since then?
We got robbed or burglarized.
Yeah, did you recover that?
I then, through the help of the collecting community, was able to track down the identities of the thieves, as well as the location of my stolen merchandise. And
really?
You know, the police were little to no help. Nor were any other public officials.
I'm sorry to hear that.
The people that were helpful were literally people in the collecting community. And, you know, I mean, I found the people, found my stuff, but I value my freedom more than I value my stuff. So I wasn't going to go, you know, get a gun battle, get my stuff back. So we'll just go with the Klingon proverb that revenge is a dish best served cold.
Yeah. No, I actually saw that because I went to your Instagram page and I saw that your store got robbed twice. And it was like, what, $25,000 worth of stuff?
We're still we're still figuring out stuff that's missing.
You know,
this is like 2 months later and like we're going through all the storage and being like, oh man, that box is gone.
No, that's so sad, especially during like COVID and stuff like that and people taking advantage of just a really rough time to just go in and steal property.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Valuables. At least in Portland, I'm sure it's similar in other cities. I mean, there are businesses here that have been broken into like 5 or 6 times during this whole thing.
That's not something that you need right now.
No, it's not very helpful.
Well, I hope since you know where they are, since you know where they live and you know their names, I hope that eventually the police can help you get it.
Yeah, let's hope so. Not crossing my fingers on that one, but
I will cross my fingers for you.
Well, I appreciate it.
I got you. But I also want to check in, besides that tragedy, how is Michael and Liz and how are they doing? Because their stories were also about like providing for their family right now, because they could, I think Michael said that he was like the breadwinner for his entire family right now because his dad couldn't work.
Yeah, so during the filming of the episode, he was, I think, the sole income in his household. And, you know, I mean, the restaurant industry is not great anywhere, I don't think, right now. So, you know, his dad, I think, is working part-time now. So he's definitely still helping out a lot, you know, paying for bills and things around the house. And then Liz gave up on Portland and went back to Texas.
Oh, where in Texas?
Austin, Texas.
I'm from Houston.
Okay.
From Houston, Texas.
In Houston.
You know, don't go to Houston. Your hair looks terrible from most of the majority of the year because it's so humid. How else have you guys been doing? How's your virtual storefront? Because most businesses weren't prepared to go virtual to sustain during this pandemic.
Well, we have all, well, not always. I mean, we didn't, I think it says in the episode, we didn't have a computer in the store for like the first 4 years we were open. I mean, we've been around longer than most like vintage toy stores. But, you know, for the last 10 years or so, we've been, you know, kind of a 50-50 mix of retail and online. So it was a pretty tough hit to take like a 50% loss in our sales. And, you know, we've not been able to make that whole thing back up by selling stuff online, nor will we be able to. And we are still open by appointment. We have been open by appointment the whole time. You know, we just want to make sure people are masked up and there's only one or two people in the shop at a time and, you know, everything's cleaned up between every customer. But a lot of people seem to have trouble with the concept of an appointment. So, you know, retail has definitely been on the slow side.
I don't know. I mean, do you guys have 2021 year goals of like what you would like to see come back with the store and stuff like that? Like any benchmarks that you're looking for?
No, I mean, I think we're just taking it day by day and not really setting up any goals to disappoint ourselves with because, you know, we have no control over a virus or political climate or any of that kind of thing. So, you know, we really have to just see what's happening and roll with it. I mean, I would love to say like, yeah, we're going to open in February, you know, and everybody can come on in, but I don't think that's a thing that I have any say in really.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I like to create some goals for myself and just like look at them and be like, and I hope by next year I will be in Scotland, March. Just gonna put it out there in the ethos.
I'm actually supposed to be in French Polynesia as we speak.
Oh, really? I
had flown there last night. It was a really depressing day yesterday getting, it was still in my email reminders, you know, so I kept getting all these reminders for these flights to Papeete in Tahiti. And I'm like, oh yeah, wish I was on that plane. Cause I have to go places like that where they don't really have a toy collecting culture to actually have a vacation. Cause if I'm anywhere near where I think I can find some toys, I am too obsessive and can't stop.
I understand that. I understand that that tick that you need, that itch that must be scratched.
Yeah, we were in Iceland and my girlfriend thought I couldn't buy anything there. And I proved her wrong.
Where did you go buy things in Iceland?
I found an antique shop and, you know, made some contacts and then went around and yeah, I did some stuff and worked some stuff out. It was pretty interesting. But
what did you buy in Iceland? Can you say?
It was not really much toy related. I'm still working out deals actually, even after a couple of years on some Icelandic specific Star Wars things.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, which is, you know, that stuff's pretty tough to find because Iceland's has a very small population. So anything produced in the Icelandic language is, you know, much more limited than probably anything produced for really any other country.
Wow.
But I did pick up some cool Icelandic language Lord of the Rings comics from the 70s.
Nice.
I had never seen, actually in any language. It took me a while to figure out who the artist and stuff was. And I've never seen them released in English. I think they're primarily released just in Europe, which is a little strange.
That is very, very cool. I am a big Lord of the Rings fan, but being who I am, I am a big fan of I did read all the books, but I also, I loved the movies. The movies, I thought they were very good, except for The Hobbit.
I still haven't seen that one, but I'm not very motivated because I hear a lot of people saying the same thing you're saying. I sometimes wish that I was a child during the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings film because, I mean, I loved them as an adult even, but I thought, man, if I was a little kid and saw these, like, you know, that would be my Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, they basically were my, I was in high school. So it was like the first movie I think came out when I was a freshman and the last movie came out when I was senior or junior. Yeah, when was the last Return of the King? I think that was 2003. That would make me a junior in high school.
Okay, yeah, no, like it was, that was still nerd stuff when I was in high school. Like, you know, there was no mainstream acceptance of any of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, it's, I don't know, that's an interesting thing that's changed because pop culture and, you know, what is traditionally nerd culture has become extremely mainstream and, you know, could arguably considered even like cool culture at this point.
You can. The Comic-Cons are like the place to be now.
Yeah, I mean, cons are huge. I mean, you know, like I used to go to cons and it was just, you know, it's nothing like they were now. You know, I have mixed feelings about that because, you know, for what I do with vintage stuff, you know, cons are very, very not focused on that anymore. It's more just the spectacle and what's current and what's hot and what everybody's into right now. And, you know, all these old guys with their old toys, they have kind of been pushed out of that scene, which is sort of sad to see, but, you know, I guess that's kind of the natural progression of things.
Yeah, I mean, these so with New York Comic Con, they do have the rows of like, well, at least for vintage comics or stuff like that, that people can go and try and collect and buy and stuff like that. But I don't think they bring any of the really, really rare comics to New York Comic Con.
No, there is. There is, because Metropolis Comics sets up there and they have about some of the rarest stuff out there. And I actually have a number of friends that sell both vintage toys and comics at that show. But I mean, it's, you know, even then, it's still such a small percentage of what's happening at that event. It's still going to be 90%+ modern items and Funko Pops and cosplay. And it's just what people have more fun with. It's more accessible to people.
What's your take on Funko Pops? I'm always curious about toy collectors and what they feel about Funko.
Beanie Babies of right now. You know, you see people spending.
I've compared them to Beanie Babies.
Yeah, and you were correct because people are spending a fortune on them. And all those people are just like, you know, they're wasting their money. Give it 10 years. And like, you know, they're going to be in the dollar bins. There's going to be, you know, like Beanie Babies, there's going to be a handful of rare ones that are genuinely valuable and genuinely hard to find. But, you know, you've seen it cycle through like time and again with just various collectibles like Spawn toys, Beanie Babies. I mean, you know, you can get Cabbage Patch Kids, whatever, you go on and on where people like just hoard these things, you know, and think they're going to be worth a fortune, and they're not. At all. It's the exact same thing as all these things that have come before it. So again, I feel bad for people that are treating those as an investment. You know, if people genuinely like them, then good for them. But right. You know, if people are investing in them, then they should probably seek some financial advice from somebody a little smarter than themselves.
That's a good rule of thumb to know, because I was actually going to ask you, do you currently collect toys that you think will be valuable like later on? Like, for instance, there's so many Baby Yoda merch and toys going on right now that like, are you able to pinpoint, you know what, that toy is going to be worth something one day?
Oh, not at all. I have extra money to spend on toys to sit around as an investment, and it's not going to be current merchandise. You know, I'm going to buy vintage toys that I think are going to be better in the future and set those aside, because if there is anything that I have learned from doing this, it's that people that buy this stuff specifically to make money off it very seldom make money. Like, I've bought or refused to buy so many storage units that are just filled with like 90 Star Wars, 90 Star Trek, Spawn toys, like all these things that, you know, people spent all this money on thinking they were going to make money back on it, and you know, they wind up losing a fortune. You know, that it doesn't go for anywhere near retail even. So I would definitely not advise anybody to buy modern toys as an investment. You know, you should only buy them if you like them, because you might be stuck with them
for a very 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 long time. So since I'm not a vintage toy collector, I always am curious about what categorizes as a vintage toy.
I mean, I would never put a number on that personally. I always find it annoying when people are like, you know, an antique is 25 years or older, or like some shit like that. Like, you know, it's typically, you know, in reference to my store, you know, we typically are dealing in things that are from the 1980s and earlier, though the 90s are certainly creeping in there, because the people that grew up with that stuff are of the age where they have good paying jobs and want that stuff back now. But, you know, I don't think that we'll ever sell stuff from this millennium. I mean, I don't know, maybe after I'm gone, the store's still going, maybe, you know, maybe somebody will take up the reins and sell something that I hate, but not while I'm around.
Not while you're around. Okay. It's funny too, because you're talking about like the 90s starting to creep in there, because I'm a 90s kid. So for me, I always sit back and wonder if I should have ever kept any of my Tamagotchis, my Beanie Babies, my brother's Power Ranger toys, the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger toys and stuff like that. And I had like all five of the Spice Girl dolls at one point. was like, I wonder if that's ever going to be worth anything one day, and I should have just kept them.
Well, I mean, typically anything in life all, has something that is worth some money in the future. Though Spice Girls, they kind of produce them all equally, so there's no one Spice Girl that's more valuable than the rest. Beanie Babies are the bane of my existence. People call me constantly wanting to sell them, thinking they're worth a ton, which there are a handful of them that are worth some money, but I don't care enough to educate myself about them, so we stay away from them.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No, I understand. The only Beanie Baby that I ever thought that took me a while to get was the Princess Diana bear.
Yeah, that's a pretty famous
one. And that one was like a collector's edition. They were only, The Princess Diana bear was really hard to come by. And I'm sure it's somewhere in storage somewhere back in Texas of like all my Beanie Babies and the bears and the different, and Princess Diana's in there somewhere. But no. It's an interesting world, the toys. Do you have a favorite, I don't want to say a favorite toy brand, but is there one in particular that you played with as a kid that you would like, you would collect them no problem and never sell them?
As a kid?
As a kid.
I liked a lot of like weird fantasy figures like Dungeons and Dragons, Arco's Otherworld toy line, Dragon Riders of the Styx, like a lot of kind of more obscure toy lines. I loved that stuff when I was a kid. I still love it. If I get something from those lines that I don't have, then it's not going to the shop. It's going home.
Oh, that's cute. When you say that when you go out and shopping for toys and stuff like that, where do you go and find these toys besides like the internet, like toy conventions or anything like that? Or
I like to use an airplane myself.
Like to use an airplane.
Far away from, wherever everybody else thinks they're going to find these toys are, because, that's not where they're going to be found, at least anything that strikes my fancy. So I spend a lot of time in Japan, not as much as I used to, but I buy, Japanese toys as well as other toys, because there's always been a huge collecting culture in general in Japan. I'm tied in with the toy collecting scene like over there, and do a lot of toy shows and things in Japan. And I also just love the people and country and culture there. So do a lot of toy shopping in Japan. I've been starting to do a lot more toy shopping in Europe. I probably would have been both of those places, like, if this stuff wasn't going on since it started. Usually right around now, I'm usually in Japan for a toy show that happens in the fall that I like to go to, and I was actually hoping to do a event in the Netherlands in the spring, but that did not happen, obviously. And I'm gonna be surprised if I'm able to go next spring even. I don't know, we'll see. Maybe end of next year, get back on some planes, start buying some cool toys. I have plenty of people in all these places that I've developed personal contacts with that I can get to send me these toys, but it's not as productive or as fun as being there in person.
No, I think that's great. I was going to ask, do you have like a conquest toy that you have not found yet, but you are bound and determined to travel the earth until you find this toy?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I'm not really. Well, there's a little dolphin with a cowboy hat in Japan from the 1973 Osaka Oceanic Exposition named Iruton, more commonly referred to as Dolphin Family. They made a lot of merchandise for that guy, but there is a talking version of him that I have been looking for years, and I have never seen one for sale. People have only told me after the fact when they've come up for sale, which is not very often. So that, actually, I'm going to say that's my thing. That's the thing I want. A talking dolphin family figure.
That's the thing you want.
That's my number one. I'm gonna keep going to Japan until I find it.
No, of course, you still keep questing for toys and stuff like that. Can you name me like five of toys that you're like, these are the five, like these are some of the toys that I would love to find?
I obsess over a lot of things, and a lot of things like they said that I really like are sort of like the original paintings that go with toys, or sometimes the original sculpture that was used to create a toy. And a lot of times those things don't even exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's also not necessarily known what exists and what doesn't. So, I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to see, but they don't necessarily even exist still.
No, I found it funny because I was so fascinated with the first episode that Brian did of the toys that made us with Star Wars, and how people are trying to find that Rocket Boba Fett, that rare Boba Fett that, you know, because I wasn't born yet, I had no idea that this was a toy that, like, people are like, I need this toy. Do you have one of those?
I had four of them last year.
You had four of them? Did you sell all of them?
I have one for myself, but four was actually... Oh, good. To the best of my understanding, four is the most that anybody has ever found in one go, which that's a long and crazy story. But yeah, wind up with four, you know, original Rocket Fets. None of them had the rockets, unfortunately. But, you know, when there's something that is that scarce, you can't really be too picky. Very happy to have them in any condition. I was a little surprised in that episode of Toys That Made Us that they couldn't find anybody with a real Rocket Fet to show.
I guess it's that hard.
It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. But yeah, I don't know. There's I don't know. It's pretty public. The people that own a chunk of them, at least, like about half of them. People are pretty good at keeping track of them and how many exist and when they change hands and things like that. The Star Wars collecting community is really active and on top of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a case where one was actually stolen a couple of years ago, and, you know, people quickly figured out who had it.
Wow. Is that what happened with Skywalker Ranch? Is that the same circumstance, or is that different? Because I know that Skywalker Ranch, somebody broke in and stole a bunch of stuff from there as well.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it was on the news. Like Brian and I were actually talking about it. It was something to where I think somebody that worked for him was basically helping people smuggle out like really rare toys. And it was like, I don't even want to remember the number they said of how much money he was stolen from him and worth of toys. And
oh, that was Skywalker Ranch. That was Rancho Obi-Wan.
It was Rancho Obi-Wan. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Skywalker Ranch, that's Lucasfilm. Like, I think they have pretty good security.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Lucasfilm.
I'm pretty surprised somebody broke in there.
Yeah.
But Rancho Obi-Wan is run by Steve Sansweet, you know, who's been a prominent collector for years and years. And, It's really sad because it was somebody that, you know, I think he considered a friend, and I think actually helped out around there and just, you know, robbed him blind.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Is that the case where somebody stole one of the Rocket Obi-Wan guys or no?
Rocket Fets, yeah.
Rocket Fets. In your store right now, has there been a particular toy brand that you've been selling that's been in demand during quarantine, or is it just kind of a wide spectrum?
No, I mean, we always sell a very broad spectrum of stuff, especially since we have a more eclectic sort of selection of things than the average place. So I will say that the last year or so, G.I. Joe has gotten a lot stronger than it has been in a number of years.
G.I. Joe?
Yeah. So that's a big mover these days. That's really the only one that I think's like, you know, you've seen a noticeable uptick in.
You know, He-Man's about to have a reboot. I wonder if people are going in for like He-Man toys, or I'm just always wondering if reboot culture also boosts toy sales of like their vintage counterpart, like when She-Ra had a new Netflix show.
See, that's like, it's sort of a mixed bag on that, because say like My Little Pony, that made the new cartoon made My Little Pony massively popular, but it did not impact the sale of like original G1 ponies, because people that are into modern My Little Pony cartoon, they don't have any interest in those. Those don't look anything like the ponies from the new cartoon. There's a few of them that have the same names, but you know, in general, like somebody that's into that is not going to care about the old stuff. See, Charlie's Angels, when those films came out, like before those films came out, Charlie's Angels stuff was very sellable, like all the stuff in the original 70s show. But after those movies came out, it just killed that market. You know, I haven't tried to get Charlie's Angels stuff for years just because nobody cares about it, which I always thought that was odd that film just kind of killed that market like that.
That is odd.
Yeah, I mean, it's not in the comic book scene that creates a lot more interest in the original products. Like people want like the first appearance of whatever character they like from whatever TV show or movie that they're into, like on the superhero front. And that stuff is driven to astronomical prices. You know, it can happen overnight too. You know, when they announce like some villain that previously nobody cared about, you know, maybe just in a couple issues of a comic book, like in the '60s, and, you know, it's like a really forgotten thing. And then they're like, oh, this is who like Iron Man's going to fight, you know, then all of a sudden, like the comic goes from being worth maybe 10 or 20 bucks to hundreds or even thousands, like almost overnight. Mm-hmm. So I guess comics would be the one thing that,
no, like, that makes sense.
Modern resurgence really can drive the market.
But not necessarily toys.
It can do things to it, but it's not so much, no. And generally when it does stuff to the market, it's more adversely affected, because maybe like Hasbro like reissues like something that's really similar to like an original thing, and people are like, well, I can just get that one cheaper, so I don't need a vintage one anymore. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Generally, I'd say as far as vintage collectibles, it's probably not a net positive effect.
Okay. What brand would you think is the most consistent? That's like for instance, has Star Wars been always a consistent seller?
Star Wars has absolutely always been a consistent seller. I mean, there's been, you know, valleys and peaks in that market. I think we're not quite in a valley right now, but definitely, you know, not anywhere near a peak at the moment. I think the last films sort of made a lot of fans disinterested in it. I was very happy to see Disney acquire that brand, because, you know, that means it will live far beyond my lifetime and they will continue making Star Wars stuff. And there will always be interest in the original Star Wars things. So that makes me excited, because there will be forever a group of people that is new to Star Wars and going to want to go back at some point, buy some of those original things. So I can continue selling that through my lifetime, as opposed to like, say, I've seen with a lot of like, say like cowboy collectibles, Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, like the whole singing cowboy thing that was huge in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
All those guys that collect that stuff are either dead or already have everything they want. And then when they die, their stuff goes back to the market and there's nobody to reabsorb it. Mm-hmm. So you see, you know, prices on stuff that used to be like, you know, crazy toys that there's so much competition over just kind of sit now. And you see that, you know, you see that sort of creep forward. A lot of like, you know, a lot of 50s and 60s stuff that didn't have anything to renew the interest in it has really dropped off and isn't really picking up. And, you know, you'll start to see that with some 70s toys at some point. And, you know, eventually, you know, it just keeps creeping forward where people, you know, that generation dies, or the serious collectors have spent years honing their collections and already have everything. And there's just nobody to buy anything. So I don't know. It's a interesting phenomenon.
No, absolutely. You know, Star Wars, I think, is very lucky that they have the life that they're going to have, because people are always going to look at that original set of films as like the Star Wars, and then everything that comes after it is just gravy. Depending on who you talk to about the prequels and the current trilogy.
Very true, but the point is that people still talk about it.
Yeah.
So relevant, whether people like it or don't like it. And that's the thing. And, you know, and that things that are more fantastical lend themselves to that. It's like the singing cowboy example. Like, that genre is never going to be a popular genre ever again. I mean, the world has moved on from that. You know, but if you look at science fiction toys from the same era, you know, you look at just a robot. Doesn't have to be a special robot from a TV show or anything. Doesn't have to be like a Robbie from Forbidden Planet. Just any like cool robot from that era, they're worth more than they've ever been.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all about context, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're about to get a Dune film and stuff like that, which is going to bring a resurgence in any Dune collectibles that were out there from the 80s.
Yeah, that's an odd duck. You know, I'm amazed that they ever made children's toys for that film. I mean, I was a huge fan of that film when I was a kid.
Well, they had to try.
You know, I think that LJN probably lost a fortune on that license. And I know that Brian Volkweis is a huge fan of things that he feels should not have been made. And a lot of Dune items fall within that purview.
Yep. All the Dunes. All those inner monologues that just reminded me a little bit of Dragon Ball Z, in the sense of like at the anime when there's just a lot of inner monologuing before fights. And when I saw the Dune movie, I was like, this is a lot of inner monologue, inner dialogue going on for me right now as a kid. So I kind of lost interest.
Yeah. Have you ever read the books? I mean, I don't know how you would do the films without that inner monologue.
I mean, I get it, but as a kid, so I have a funny side story. So I interview for Den of Geek. And so I was at San Diego Comic-Con and I was given the task of interviewing Rod Roddenberry. And it was a last minute thing. Like I literally had 5 minutes to prepare. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I wish I had more time to prep this because I'm not really a Star Trek person. And so he walks in. So I just Googled him really quickly. And I saw that he was a huge fan of Star Wars as a kid because he found Star Trek to be boring to him. So he walks in. I was like, hi, I'm Bevan. I love Star Wars. He's like, ah, I love Star Wars too. And he went into this whole tangent about as a kid, what he didn't like was all the talking. It was just not, it wasn't retaining. It wasn't keeping his attention. Because he wanted to see battles and good guys versus bad guys, and Star Trek wasn't about that. It was, you know, as clear as like Star Wars was.
Yeah, I mean that's an arguable point, but I get how people get there. I think that's a really common opinion, but you know, I think that when you get to the prequels, Star Wars does have a lot of talking, and if you really sit and look at Star Trek, there are some pretty good battles in Star Trek.
Yeah. No.
I would definitely say Star Trek is certainly more intellectual and there's definitely different fandoms for them. And the fandoms like, you know, behave very differently.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's totally on the Star Trek boat now, but he was saying just as a kid, that was the one argument he had with his dad because he wanted like the toys of Star Wars were very clear. Those are the Darth Vader and his bad guys. And I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm the hero. I go take down the bad guys. Like as the simplicity of a kid, that just seemed more exciting to him and stuff like that.
That makes sense. I mean, I could see definitely the appeal to children. I guess I'm not thinking of children. I don't deal with children very much.
Right, because most...
About, like man children.
You deal with man children. Man childs that come in like, I want Rainbow Bright.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I was actually going to ask you, like, is there any Rainbow Bright in your store?
Of course there is. We have always sold toys for women. Like even before,
awesome. It was
like, you know, more of a mainstream thing. Like we've always made sure to have a selection of toys, you know, not that toys are necessarily gender specific, but, you know, obviously mm-hmm. like it's more likely that women are going to buy Strawberry Shortcake and Rainbow Bright and things like that, you know, but there's also plenty of women that collect Star Wars.
Yep.
You know, and vice versa. I mean, there's like, I had a very good male Rainbow Bright customer specifically for a number of years, you know, and I have a few Strawberry Shortcake pieces in my own collection.
Nice.
You know, it's interesting seeing sort of the evolution of collecting. You see the last few years in the United States specifically, a lot more women involved in the toy collecting scene. Like interestingly in Japan, like women were involved.
Nice.
To like a more serious level, like years earlier than they were here. So I don't know, it's nice to see like ladies that have like, you know, serious Star Wars collections or like, you know, they're not like, I like Star Wars. You know, they're like, no, here's the weird variant from this country, you know, and I tracked down this thing and like, what? You don't know what I'm talking about? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, so it's nice to see like, you know, that happening now and it's not just a total sausage fest.
Yeah, no, it's ladies are having a comeback. I even read that there are more video game female players now more than ever. Like they're really coming in to hone in on the bracket of like guy players versus girl players. And there's just a lot more of them just coming up to bat.
Well, good for that. You know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I hope people knock off all that stupid like Gamergate shit and all that and just, you know, let people be people instead of like
exactly.
Be upset that women are like, I don't understand what, you know, these video game guys are like threatened that like women were coming into their scene. I don't even know what was going on with that, but. It's all very annoying. People need to grow up.
Exactly. Grow up and just let the ladies in. You'll have a good time. I will have to say, you have a very eclectic jacket collection too. I think they're very stylish.
Oh, thank you.
Is that like your staple piece of Billy Galaxy?
No, I mean, I've always kind of liked Western wear. I go through phases. Sometimes I like it more than others. Definitely
okay.
Big into it right now. I have many more wonderful items that were not shown in the show.
Oh, really? That's for the next season, Billy. That's for the next season. So, Billy, we unfortunately have to wrap up, but I want to make sure before we go, is there anything else that you want to cover topic-wise that we have not covered yet? about your store? What's up next with it? How can we support?
Well, you can always give us a call, 503-227-8253. We're open for business, though not for walk-ins. If you're in the Northwest, you're welcome to make an appointment. We can set up a walk-in for you. We're always buying stuff. We're always selling stuff. You can email us too, but I like people's voices. I like when you call me better.
Okay, that's great. And then you also have social media pages that people can follow to support.
We do. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and eBay and all the usual places. I try to be more active in social media, and I'm not very good at it. So it is what it is.
Tis what it is, Billy. It is. Well, I want to thank you so much for being my first guinea pig for this new companion podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you. And I hope that it continues to get better and better as you do them.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So we're going to sign off and we'll see you next time on a Toy Store Near You podcast.
Mint on a card and loose complete prototypes that are really unique. Great Garlou and me go to this and more at a toy store near you. Subscribe to us too. And like and comment.